Great day, everyone. Rhonda Y. Williams here with your pre-Coffee with Rhonda Show espresso shot. So what is women's work? Let me back up a little bit. So do you buy your daughter's dolls and buy your son's cars? Do you encourage your little girls with easy bake ovens and playing house while you tell the boys to go outside and rough house? You see, from a very young age, so many of us are conditioned in gender-specific lanes. So fast forward, and we are at a place where we continue to struggle with creating more equitable homes and workplaces, while many women are bearing the weight of this struggle to get it all done. Consider this. Is it time to completely dismiss the notion of women's work? Today on the Coffee with Rhonda Show, episode 106, we are going to dive in with our special guest, Dr. Regina Lark, and we are going to break it all down. Let's get ready to lead above the grind. Everyone, super excited to be here. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. We are happy to be back. We are in season 9. This is episode 106. And today we're going to have an amazing and fantastic discussion. But before we get to that, you all know the drill. Take a moment to like and share this video. I promise you there is something in this video and this conversation today that someone else will want to hear. Also, we want to be sure that you go to our YouTube page. You can go to coffeewithrhondashow.com and you can be sure that you subscribe so that you can always stay tuned with what we're up to. So with all that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams and I'm your host for the show. And I am a former chief nursing officer, hospital CEO with my own levels of past stress. I call myself an RSO or a recovering stressed out leader, and I am here today on a journey to advocate for a more well-being, holistic way of leadership that includes care of self and others. To learn more about the work I do in the world, you can visit atgleadership.com. So with all of that being said, today in my cup, I have my little cup, my coffee, and in my cup today, I have coffee with pumpkin spice creamer. I love the holidays. I love all the pumpkin spice flavors and sweet potato pie. If you want to throw that in there, we can get that in there too. So that's me. So let's introduce our co-host for today, and then we'll introduce our special guest. So Miss Roz Jones, how are you?
I'm participating in life. How's everybody else?
As you can see,
I'm working. This was an unscheduled situation, but I'm here, and I'm Roz Jones. I am the CEO and owner of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, where we help expand the life of your loved one. Why do we do it? We do it to help the caregiver to reduce that SOS on their journey, which means stress, overwhelmed, and providing safety and security. When you can't do it all, give Roz Jones a call. Now, let me tell you something. This topic tonight is a woman's work done. It better not be, or nothing would get done all over the universe. I'm Roz Jones, and I'm done.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, so awesome. Thank you, Roz, for being here. Sorry about that unexpected call, but you know how it is, right? You jump in there and make it happen. So thank you for being here. For those of you, you know that we have another co-host, which is Marae Chulakima, the greatness engineer. She's actually a little under the weather today. So please send Marae all of your warm and healing energy wishes. So with that being said, I'm going to introduce our special guest for today. Let me introduce Dr. Regina Lark. And Dr. Regina Lark is a professional speaker and entrepreneur who holds a PhD in women's history from the University of Southern California. And her work in that field informs her third and most recent book, which is Why a Woman's Work is Never Done. And more importantly, right, I love this part, what to do about it. So Dr. Lark helps women rid their lives of emotional labor by offering concrete ways to identify and mitigate the cost of women's unseen, unnoticed, and unwaged work at home in order to unleash women into their full potential in paid workplace. Dr. Lark is also a professional organizer and founder of A Clear Path, which provides professional, physical, emotional, and psychological support to people who wish it to clear clutter and chaos from their lives. Welcome to the coffee table, Dr. Regina Lark. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you. I can't even tell you how happy I am to be here. You two crack me up. I loved your I love the intro that you do for the show. I laughed the whole way through. So when the camera came on, I'm thinking I look like a grinning idiot. And Roz, you're already killing me. So yay. I'm so glad to spend time with the two of you.
Thank you. This is going to be so much fun. I'm so sorry that Marae is going to miss this one. We may have to have you back again so we can do a part two.
Okay, twist my arm.
Yes, when she's here. So before we get started, I want to just say good morning to Regina out there listening to us. And she says she's got coffee in her cup. And if you're out there and you're listening, don't forget to tell us where you are, where you're watching from, and what's in your cup. So Regina, what do you have in your cup?
I got some decaf and calf. And this cup was given to me in the last day of the last semester. I taught my final women's history class. And so she gave me this cup. It says born to teach.
Oh, nice.
And then it says a teacher gives, a teacher shares, but most of all, a teacher cares.
Oh,
I've had this since 2016. It's the only coffee cup I use, and I drink coffee all through the day. So It's lovely to start it. Well, I actually started it 2 hours ago. I'm in Long Beach, California.
Okay. All right. Awesome. I love that cup and the great story behind it. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I am excited about diving into our conversation today. But before we get into specifically all of the women's work, I ask every guest to share an opening quote and something that's meaningful and resonates with them. And you shared a quote. So I'm going to share your opening quote. I'll read it for those listening audio only later on podcast also. So for you listening later on audio form only, the quote says, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it will achieve. And it's a quote by Napoleon Hill. So the first question, Regina, is always, why this quote and how does it connect to what we are going to talk about today?
I'm loving this so far. Okay. In 2008, I went to Jerusalem to visit a very good friend of mine. And while I was there, I said, Nadhra, I don't want to be a tourist. How about if I do your kitchen? And she said, Habibti, what does that mean? I said, Nadhra, your girls are in their 30s. You got sippy cups in the cupboard. Just let me do what I do. So I did what I do. Anyway. A week later, I go back to my job and I was an administrator at a major research university. And I learned a week after I got back from my vacation that my position was eliminated and my unit was dismantled and I was essentially laid off. Oh. 2 months. Wait, the goddess of jobs had just done for me what I could not do for myself. Okay. So 2 months into this layoff, I told my roommate, I'm going to organize until something better comes along. And that was 15 years later, and nothing has. In the first couple of months of starting this business, I read this book called Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And I just didn't, I mean, I had been in higher education for so many years. I read a lot of history books and women's studies books, and I had never thought of an entrepreneurial Regina. So I read this book cover to cover, and then I read it again, as it says at the end, read this book again. And I was so blown away, and this is how I describe it, that the words of a dead straight white guy would fall on my shoulders the way it did. And what I needed in that moment was to really shift my mindset about how I was going to start moving through my life now that I think I want to have a business as a professional organizer. Mm-hmm. So the quote that first resonated was, whatever the mind could conceive and believe, it will achieve. And that has happened.
Okay, I'm ready when you are.
I'm ready right now. That has happened. And I'm so grateful for what these last 15 years have brought me. It's a never say never. It's can't say I have, won't say I won't.
Wow. How powerful. What a powerful story. For those of you that have not read Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, I highly, highly recommend it. It is a life-changing book. Yes. I agree. I absolutely love that book. So when you said that quote, I was like, oh, yes. See, Regina, we're definitely here, right? You and I, we are definitely connected because that book is amazing. So let's dive now into women's work. So first, I want to make
one caveat. If you read the book in its original writing from the 1930s, you may be aghast by some of the racist and sexist writing. So actually, in my book, I changed things. I crossed it out and put the word that I wanted. Anyway, so just know that if you do read it in the original form, you may be kind of triggered by some of the language.
Yeah, thank you for that. And always remember the context and the setting and all of that. So thank you for that. So I want to say good morning to Jo Beth, who's out there watching, and she says, good morning. My usual carrots, beets, cucumber juice with added grapes. Jo Beth, you sound like my mom, who I don't see this morning, but she's always got this amazing concoction in her cup too. So thanks so much for joining. Let's dive into our conversation, and Roz, because she is working, will probably bop in and out of the show, but you all know how we do. We just keep it moving. So I am really interested in talking about this women's work. I want to first do a little bit of level setting. What is women's work? How do you define women's work, or at least in the context of the work that you do?
Well, thank you. Now that I know that the work of household management doesn't actually require a vagina, it's hard to really say what women's work is, because when we use the term women's work, what we really are talking about is household management.
Right.
And that's what that is. It's just the work. You actually don't need a woman for the work unless you're pushing out a baby or breastfeeding. Other than that, the whole role of homemaking is up for grabs, truly. But
okay, Regina, stop for a minute, because Roz is cracking up, and I feel like she's gonna burst over there. Roz, Miss Roz, what you got to say? Oh no, we lost her. Right. Oh, go ahead. Unmute, Roz.
you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I totally agree. It does not require those body parts in order to get the work done.
Yes, yes, yes.
However, if you want it done correctly, then a woman should be on the head of the team.
Wow. Wow.
That's just Ross Jones's opinion.
Well, that was a perspective.
All right. All right, Ms. Ross.
If you can really become okay with the whole idea of good enough, then maybe we can extrapolate. Maybe we could bring this woman out of the equation so she can do her. Just a thought.
Yeah.
But you know, men do have a female side. So I can understand the part where you said it doesn't need a vagina. I can understand that part, you know, because, you know, men do have a softer side. And
let's talk about it, Roz, because so Dr. Lark, I was doing some of the research and getting ready for this show. One of the things that I found interesting is the way that you described the reason we are so good at the things we're good at. Right. Mm-hmm. Share a little bit about that, because I think that that matters. People think, oh, women are just born to do housework. It's like, no, that's not really it. But why are we, quote, good at certain types of work?
Well, I have to step back and say not all of us are good at it. And so much of the work, you know, we joke about you don't need a vagina to do the work. What you actually do need, we've been referencing the wrong body part, right? Not the vagina, but the executive function parts of our brain. And the executive function parts of our brain are non-gendered. And so that part of our brain, it's like the newest evolution of the human brain. We start out with the amygdala and the limbic system, the fight or flight. That's still there. But over time, the brain develops so that the prefrontal cortex contains our ability to plan, prioritize our working memory, to have a good relationship with time. Our emotions are steady. These are executive function skills and qualities, I guess. So there's two things. To answer your question, Rhonda, one of the reasons why it appears that females are more adept at household management is because females are raised to witness all of that work. For centuries, we've raised girls into women and boys into men very, very differently from each other. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at these, you know, the bread baker, bread winner roles. We're looking at the role of women right after the American Revolution. It's like, okay, the founders are going, we're going to build this great country. Who's going to lead us? And it's like, we need to be led by moral conscience. We see where that went down the road. We need to sober, thrifty, moral, conscientious leaders. Where are they going to come from? They're going to come from a well-ordered home. And so right after the American Revolution, we see the advent of what some historians call Republican motherhood. And there's a great historian, I have to remember her name. I'm not going to get quoted here. But the idea is this: the weight of the Republic is now affixed firmly on her shoulders, and she better not get it wrong. So she's tasked with teaching and training the future leaders of the state. So the role of motherhood became synonymous with the development of the future leaders. Now, I see that as a pretty big task. And yes, somebody has to do that. But when you look at what happens in a household 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, it's a lot of work. And her role in the home really hasn't changed a whole lot. We're talking post-American mm-hmm. Revolution, 1780s, and here we are in the 21st century. That was the the end of the 18th century. So here we are, continuing to raise girls into women, boys into men, very, very similar than we have for a long time. And so women are just raised, girls are just raised to notice all the stuff that has to be done. And if they're not bearing witness to both of the adults in the household, partnering on all of the tasks of the household, when we see one adult doing tasks that are often done, mowing the lawn, done, taking out the trash, done, the household tasks that we traditionally associate with one gender or the other, most of the work that has been assigned to males in the household is frequently done. It gets done, and then the grass grows, and then you do it again. I get there's a repetitive nature of it, but it's repetitive, you know, monthly. Car repair, repetitive biannually. You know, so what we've done is that we've created roles in the household. We continue to adhere to roles. We haven't done it. It was laid at our doorstep. We continue to adhere to these roles. And then, you know, you get to, well, I'm better at it. I'll do it myself and all of that. But here's the rub. And here's the thing that really compelled me to think and talk about this. Despite whether if you're female and you're raised to witness the invisible work of emotional labor, planning, processing, thinking about what's coming up next, school permission slips. You know, here we are at the end of October, all kinds of women are thinking about Thanksgiving. It's the planning, it's the invisible work. No one's seeing the calculations going on in your head. Oh, and where, I know that we had really good Christmas decorations last, you know, they're thinking about ahead. When I think of having that skill set to plan, prioritize, think ahead, all the ingredients that you need to manage a household, if you're someone who was born with executive function challenges, and that comes in the form of ADHD, later on, depression, anxiety, your executive function is going to be challenged with marriage, death, birth, divorce, anything right. That kind of tweaks the status quo. If you don't have strong executive functioning skills, then you're going to be behind the eight ball and you're going to have clutter and you're going to have a really crappy relationship with time.
Okay, stop right there for a minute, because you've said a lot. And this notion that you are raising about men's work being limited, right, and time bound, where the work that women are assigned to do is like ongoing forever. Well, that's so crazy. Like, why would we do that to ourselves? I'm like, no wonder. But also the way that you're describing this, I think we don't really think about it in those terms. And no wonder it feels like our work is never done. Because it's not. It's not literally done. Never done.
Right. It's never done.
Roz?
But you know what, Rhonda, as she was talking, I was thinking about it. We can even go back to Bible times. We can go back to when, Mary, Martha, all these women that birthed great leaders, what were they doing? They were taking care of the house. They were taking care of the children. They were taking care of the camels and the goats and doing all this other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing, not too much. I don't want to say not too much has changed. However, that role continues to pass down generation to generation. Now, some of that has kind of transcended gender lines because of single parents, mm-hmm. you know, different communities. But if you think about it, it still starts to me. This is just my own personal opinion. It still starts with the woman. It still starts with the woman. You know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you look back, like I say, throughout history, as Doc was saying, Dr. Regina was saying, we have raised leaders.
Yeah.
Women have raised leaders from back to Jesus' time and before. Mm-hmm. I'm done speaking.
But Roz, I wanna suggest something. Back in the biblical times, yes, the work was divided by gender, but the gender's work was for the absolute survival of the household.
Mm-hmm.
So the roles, when you go back to Mary, to the Marys, right? Even further back, Old Testament, to the Judiths, okay? There, from how I end my reading, is that life was so hard. You know? Everybody's carrying water from the well. Do you know? So the role, the jobs that were being performed in ancient times were critical to the survival of the family. Where I see the real shift here is when we begin to see the separation of the spheres, public sphere and private sphere. Because the time you're talking about, it was all integrated like this. But now, when we see the advent of Republican motherhood, it's also the beginning of early industrialization. And so you see this real split between public and private. And that's where I think we start to see this real bifurcation of very strict gender roles, the way we look at it today. So I think,
yeah. It's interesting because times have changed, right? We are in a different era now. And back then, that woman's job, as we talked about, being the primary caretaker of the home and all making all of that work, they were not out working a 9-to-5, also getting a paycheck and doing all of that, and then going home and continuing all of this. And this is where I think this shift is so important. Right. So I want you to talk about, Regina, you and I were discussing before we got on and went live, we were talking about this revolution that's happened in Iceland. Maybe I should do this first. Let me show a couple of statistics first, and then I want you to talk about what's happened in Iceland, and then we'll take a little break and we'll come back and shift into what we do about it after our commercial break. So first, let me show a couple of statistics here. Because this, what we're talking about matters, right? It has had an impact on the way that we do things and the way that we view the world. So these stats, if you're watching later or listening or audio, it says for household chores, the OECD, which is an organization, shows that women spend almost twice as much time on household chores. And these stats were from 2020, 2021. In terms of representation and decision-making, in 2020, women represented only 28% of the managerial positions globally, according to UN Women, right? And then regarding unpaid labor, according to the United Nations, women perform 76% of the total hours of unpaid care, and that is more than three times as much as men. So this way of thinking about, quote, what women's work is and what women should be doing has evolved and moved is now pervasive in the workplace, where now this inequity is breeding, right? We are continuing to breed inequity. And the challenge is it really that only women can do these things? Or have we just conditioned ourselves to believe that women should do these things? Because I think that that's the rub and the difference. So, Roz, did you want to say something before I asked Dr. Regina to talk to us about what's happening in Iceland?
I guess I was thinking about when you talked about all the decision making.
Yep.
You know, and I thought about work-life balance. And then a lot of times I thought about with my parents. And a lot of times I would go and ask my dad something, and my dad would say, did you ask your mama?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah.
So the decision came down to what mama would say.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong now.
No, that's right. But that's the conditioning, right? That's how we've been conditioned. It's like, even my son, I have three sons, And I always talk about the fact that I don't watch melodramatic TV shows and movies. I don't. I need action. I need to see something blow up. I need to see cars flipping over or transforming. That I need that in my life. So if you are like the ultimate, oh, let's go see this tearjerker movie, I am not your girl. Definitely not. But I have contributed and fed into this thinking about boys and girls, right? And how different we are. So Regina, back over to you to just sort of talk about this a little bit deeper and connect it to what's happening in Iceland, because that fascinates me.
Oh, it's so funny that I think one of my, we talked about the separation of public and private and how not a whole lot has changed. I remember the moment where I had that light bulb go over my head when I recognized when women were being encouraged and being ushered into the paid workplace, given all the statistics you just read, as far as the level of work, so women come into the paid workplace by the gazillions, and so much didn't change at home. And the thing outside the home that didn't change, that ought to have changed, was the hours regulated for education. Because if the job is 9 to 5 and school is 8 to 3, there's a lot of scrambling on the front end and on the back end of all of that. That has not changed. And that is, to me, the most inequitable part. I mean, all else being equal, which never, that to me is like, if all full-time working women in the U.S. would just be up in arms about the hours for the school day, if even that could change, it's like, what? I find that fascinating. The juggle in the front of the day, the juggle in the back of the kids' day, the people that you have to have in place, from the person who's going to pick up your child from school and bring them to after school care, all of that has to be managed by somebody. And it became that added layer to be added to a woman's workload. And Roz brought up a point about, you mentioned the word balance. And so we have in our language this work-life balance. And I'm thinking, to balance anything, you gotta just have it right. It's got to be equal on both sides. That's what balance is. We fail to encourage people to just start integrating the stuff that's important, the stuff you have to do, the stuff you're gonna get paid for, the stuff you gotta care about. We're integrating our life together instead of bifurcating work and life. Is life everything that work isn't? Then we're saying that the work at home isn't work. Okay, Iceland. I love watching Roz shake her head.
Okay, hold on. Let's do it after our commercial break. Okay. We'll talk about Iceland, and then we'll talk about what are we going to do? Like, what steps can we take to move this forward? Because I think it's long past time that we start to shift some of this, and it lives in every single one of us. We all have been conditioned to believe that women should do certain things and women and men should do other things. And gosh, what will it take for us to change those limiting beliefs? So we'll do that on the other side of this commercial break.
The demands, pressures, and vital responsibilities of modern leaders are unprecedented. The relentless pace of organizational transformation, shifting workforce dynamics, and the distress of ever-heightened visibility can deaden the crucial need for renewal, self-trust, and growth that is essential to their success and that of every organization. Because the need for renewal and self-empowerment is dire, we urge you to join us for the next Leadership Accelerator cohort, wherein leaders gain the skills and winning habits enabling them to rise, be greater than their challenges, and master their leadership journey. A haven for leadership ascension, growth impact, and support, our stimulating, always rewarding discussions deliver a brain trust of thought diversity contributed by a wide-ranging talent pool of influencers, leaders, and influential professionals from every continent. Our expert trainers and coaches summon and deliver combined decades of experience and success, guiding participants upward, enhancing communication skills, nimble responsiveness, expanding confidence, and navigating conflicts with ease. This is a strategic growth process, a practical science, not a theory. Each cohort tackles real-world leadership challenges, applying modern leadership concepts that aid in career course correction and sharing the uncommon goal of creating more aware, self-directed, and visionary leaders. Please take advantage of this truly unparalleled opportunity to forge lasting connections with bold, mentor-minded leaders. Experience the advantages of advanced insights, support, and an expanded global network. Immersion in the Leadership Accelerator Cohort is a transformative experience designed and delivered to clarify, reshape, and lift any leadership journey. Join the Leadership Accelerator cohort today and ignite a path of aware, modern leadership that cultivates well-being and high-impact performance.
So this leadership work that I do is so important to me, and I'm going to tie it to our conversation that we're having today. So if you're interested in learning more about joining the Leadership Accelerator cohort. It's a 5-month program. Just text me directly. You can text me at 469-579-1788 and let's talk about who in your circle is ready for some elevated leadership discussions. But this work is really important. And I think about where we are today, Regina, and this what we're talking about, right? Which is creating a massive shift. That doesn't get happen. That doesn't work. That doesn't happen without leadership. Right. And so everything that we're talking about, we as leaders have to begin to open ourselves up and to see some of these inequities so we can do something about it. And it sounds like that's what's happening in Iceland. And that is why I'm very, very excited about it.
Well, thank you. I had known about the Women of Iceland just in the course of my reading through women's studies. And just 2 days ago, the Women of Iceland had propelled a strike for wage equality and an end to domestic violence. And this is their 7th or 8th strike. And everything I've read about it, you know, it's like, well, why are you doing it again? I guess it didn't work the first time. No, no, no. What happens is each time the Women of Iceland have reached a level of what appears to be equity, settle in like, we need to do more work. Okay. Now we still haven't seen an end to domestic violence. We've been working on that, you know? And so what I'm seeing and reading is that the Women of Iceland, in very thoughtful and measured ways, they work toward true gender equity in the whole country.
Wow.
And it was a one-day strike. I would imagine, and I haven't read yet, because it's 2 days later, the aftermath of that. But we should all be curious to understand what would lead to something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do we disrupt the narrative in our own lives, in our own communities, with the women in our lives? How do we disrupt the narrative and work on what does the new narrative look like?
Mm-hmm.
And then if women want to disrupt the narrative, how does that disruption, Where do our male counterparts come in?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're kind of part of that narrative we need to disrupt.
Absolutely.
So when I think of the women's movements in the 70s and 80s here in the US, the what was called the second wave women's movements, it was all about access. and breaking the glass ceiling and access to higher education and a law degree and, oh, hell, a credit card. I mean, it was, you know, access to buy a home without a cosigner as a single woman. They wanted access. But what, while they're fighting for access, one thing that didn't happen is their male counterparts fighting for their access along with them.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing, wow, how much better can my life become if she has more access to income, to education, to, you know, to credit, to all the things that are brought to us as these are the things that you bring into your life to raise raise the bar in your life.
Right.
Those things were available to women. So when women fought for access, I think it's so sad that their male counterparts go, yeah, let's do this, because it's awful that we don't have equity at home. Now, I know my middle name is Pollyanna and I like to think very positive about everything. I mean, there's a stake in not having to do vacuuming. Who wants to vacuum?
Right.
I mean, it's like, it was kind of, some people probably had a real stake in maintaining the status quo.
Yeah.
So
the men are over there going, okay, yeah, that's all fine for you, but chill out when it comes to me, because I'm not doing the work, right? I don't know who's going to do it then. Yeah, you don't have to do it, but I'm not doing it.
Right. So disrupting the narrative can be really scary. And especially right now, the way I see family life happening right now. So say you have two adults in the household and one of them is shouldering the burden of household management, like all of it, that nonstop job. And you want to talk to your counterpart at home about what's going on. Chances are, if you've been carrying the load, you have talked, you have cajoled, you have argued, you have fought, you have gone on strike, you've tried it all, and yet you're still folding clothes at 2 o'clock in the morning. Roz, right. I know this has, you cannot relate at all. I know, Roz. Let me see if I can explain it a little differently. Oh my gosh, you give such good face, Roz.
but you know what, Rhonda? It's as she talks about the disruptives, and you know that part, because when she said that, I connected immediately, and Rhonda knows why, and you know, it's like, okay, if he doesn't do it, when is it going to get done? You know, the clothes pile up, the grass gets high, so that means I got to hire somebody to cut the grass. Either I wash the clothes or I got to hire somebody to come in and do it. You know, so. To hurry up and get this done at 12 o'clock at night, I'll go ahead and wash. I'll go ahead and mop the floor. I'll sure. just go ahead and do it to reduce that stress on me,
mm-hmm.
to reduce the stress on me. And then you talked about the people who are the disruptors. And one person I was thinking of that hit me immediately is Sarah Jakes Roberts, Women in the Pulpit. They used to, you could seldom maybe, as little as 10 to 20 years ago, you would never see a woman in the pulpit.
Sure.
But because she's able to get out here in the pulpit, she has disrupted fashion. Mm-hmm. She has disrupted the norm, you know, the norm that women can't get up in this pulpit. And you still have some organizations, you know, some organizations that do not allow women to be in the pulpit, and recently had a vote.
Yeah, the Southern Baptist.
The mm-hmm. Southern Baptist, mm-hmm. about women being in the pulpit. I said,
in the Catholic Church.
Catholic mm-hmm. Church. So, you know, the disruptive piece is also an empowering piece, because when you see someone yes. that looks like you, okay, that means I don't have to wear the traditional outfit when I get in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
I can wear my wig when I get in the pulpit, even if it comes off like hers did. I can dress like a woman when I get in the pulpit. I can do the everybody. I want to look like everybody else. And so these are the things that allow us to, like you said, disrupt the norm.
Yep.
And now look at all the female CEOs that we have.
Right.
Females at universities that started maybe 15, 20 years ago. Just a lot of, you know, small steps that have made big ripples.
Yeah.
Right.
It's that progressive piece, right? We're making some progress, and we need to continue the conversation. These are conversations that should be happening in every workplace, right? Yeah. Because that's the only way this is going to really continue, right? To build momentum. And for those at home where the woman is doing everything, that's a difficult place to be, right? Yeah, it's a difficult place to try to have these conversations only to have it go in one ear and out the other. But I'm a big believer in, I don't say what I don't mean.
Wow, what a show.
I don't say what I don't mean. I learned that back when I was in my 5-year marriage. If I don't mean it, I'm not going to say it. That's my own self-management and self-control. But by the time it comes out of my mouth, you better believe it's real. And so when I say that I will not be vacuuming every night, and this is going to become a shared responsibility in the household, and we need to talk about what that looks like on the nights when it's not my turn, I'm not vacuuming. Just not, like, we've got to learn to approach this a little bit differently, whether we remind or whatever. And it might cause stress on relationships. And then people are evaluating, is this the relationship for me? All of that is up for debate. And that's real. Right. If you have evolved and your partner has not, what does that mean? Right. I don't know what that means. That's up for you to decide. But I'm just saying that this is an important conversation. So let's do something. Let's lighten it up a little bit and take a little bit of a break and talk about I want to do our top two, because I don't know about you all, but I'm glad that the writer's strike is over. Right. And some of our great shows are coming back. So I'm interested in what all of you are watching. And so before we do that, Joe Beth says, refusing to clean up after people in your household consequences look differently than refusing in the workplace. I may be able to get people to hop into the home or possibly move out, where it's in the workplace, it may be construed as not being a team player and being fired. How leadership responds to this is key on the outcome. Don't bury your head in the sand. Joe Beth, that goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that connection to leadership, right? So if leadership is, and let's face it, people, not every leader is there. Like, not every leader cares about equity. Not every leader thinks it's something that needs to be a priority. And you just have to understand it is what it is, right? You can't fight City Hall. If that leader doesn't care, once again, is that the place for me?
Yeah.
Right? Do I need to find a place where they do care? Because as much as we are good-hearted and kind-hearted, we cannot force people to be where we are, right? And we have to understand that that is a part of the process. And progress sometimes hurts, yeah. Right? It's a little bit painful. So let's talk about our favorite TV series now. So on the other side of our quick top two break, I'm going to ask you to share with me your favorite TV series. Give me one or two TV series that you are absolutely love. It could be past or present, because as I said, I'm certainly happy that the writer's strike and all of that is over, because all the good shows are coming back now. So even though I only have watched them because I'm working doing other stuff, but it still works. It works for me. So we'll talk about your favorite TV shows after this. All right. So when you think about your favorite TV shows, Regina, what comes to mind for you?
I don't have any.
You don't have any? Past no. or present? Never? All right. What about a movie?
I'm just not interested. I could watch SVU will just be on loop and muted.
Yeah.
I just don't pay attention. I'm always doing something else. It takes everything in me. This is why I like going to live theater.
Yeah.
I am forced to focus. Otherwise, sitting at home watching TV, I'd rather play solitaire or work on an article. And I just keep it on you know, for the background, but I'm not watching anything. I did watch Succession when it came out, and it was everything to concentrate, but I never did finish the last season because I wasn't that interested.
Okay. Awesome. That's okay too. So Roz, what about you?
Well, I'm going to take one of Dr. Regina's since she didn't use hers. I'm going to borrow a couple of hers.
Okay.
I don't know if y'all remember the show Maud.
Yeah.
I love Maud.
Maud. See, that's one.
Okay. The West Wing. The West Wing was well written. Okay. It was very well written. Right. I also liked, it hit me. I liked the Flip Wilson show.
Oh, yeah.
And Geraldine.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then my last one is the Golden Girls.
Oh.
Because they were disruptors.
They were disruptors.
Right. And then the thing that I liked about them so much was that they showed women how you could impact. They stayed in Miami, but they made an impact in Miami. Mm-hmm. And you know, even the show made an impact across the world because even when Betty White died, the whole world seemed to mourn her loss.
I love her.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So, love those. See, Regina, you have shows that you like.
Come on, Regina.
Those are good ones. Those are good.
Compartmentalize my life.
Those are good ones. Well, I'm going to go more recent. I like The Blacklist. That show was incredibly well done. I was sad to see it end. And James Spader played just an amazing character in The Blacklist. The other one, though, that was a bit of a surprise for me that I really like is a show called SEAL Team. And it's about this military unit that goes overseas and they do all these missions. But what I love about it is it shows the aftermath in their lives on the other side, the challenge to their relationships, the children who are frustrated because dad is always gone, or, you know, mom who is saying exactly, I'm tired of doing it all while you're overdoing whatever, right? So it showed both sides of their lives, and that show was a very good show. So those are my two. Andy says Dragnet. Dragnet. Andy, I remember Dragnet and LA Law. Two really good ones. Thank you so much for sharing those. And Joe Beth says, I'm in inappropriate laughter. WKRP or Wings or Big Bang Theory. Also love the Golden Girls. That is awesome, Joe Beth. Thanks so much for sharing that. Really good stuff. So let's talk. Regina, if you had to offer something for us to really continue moving this forward, give us one thought for something we could do at home, right? Because we're really talking about the tale of two worlds. And like Joe Beth said, this is real. Like, how you do this in the workplace matters. And we definitely don't want to diminish that. So is there one step that you would recommend starting with at home, and maybe one step if you see lots of inequity in the workplace that you could do to address those?
Sure. And I think it would be the same exercise.
Okay.
So no matter where you are in your journey at home with somebody, whether you're new at this, you're mid-career, you're now looking to retire, no matter where you are in the workplace, if you're in a management position, so it's household management and work management. Let's just give the same kind of titles.
Okay.
In both settings, my recommendation is to ask the adults in the household, so the wife and husband, and then ask the other managers in the company to just sit quietly and make a list of everything you do. No matter what it is, whether it's in your job description or not. If you're the one at the paid workplace that sends around the sympathy card, just note it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the carrying of the emotional labor. because emotional labor is also a necessary ingredient to the care and management and love of the people around us. So we got to have it. It just doesn't have to be done by one person. Okay. So for the adults at home, go into separate rooms and just make a list of everything that you do at home. No filters. Be curious about what you're doing. Just get it all out on paper. And if you're the one who dusts the top of the fan blades, write it down. Then compare. Then just compare. Look at the lists. And once you look at the lists, then you can make determinations of how are we going to re-delegate, or as the emotional labor book brings up, radically delegate the work that needs to be done. So you look at that list of work, all those chores, the daily, the weekly, the monthly, the annually, whatever it is, you just look at everything. I'm the one who always takes up and puts down Christmas, whatever it is. You think, okay, what absolutely can never be taken off this list? What's the sum of this stuff on the list? If neither one of us wants to do it, does it have to be done? And if there are things on this list that neither one of you ever want to touch again, then does it need to remain on the list? And how do we outsource or re-delegate that? Not even how do we. We either outsource and re-delegate, or it comes off the list. We spoke earlier of this idea, well, if you want to get it done right, sometimes I wonder about the control women have at home, and if the control is only in the place where loading the dishwasher in a particular way is where she finds control, then I want to help her shift that narrative about perfect. I want to help her shift the narrative to go from perfect to good enough. Because we've been raised to do perfect, and perfect is not working.
Yeah.
And I have the same suggestions in the paid workplace. Outside of your job description, what are you doing? Because someone looked to you. Was your job description to take the minutes in the meeting? Or someone said, well, somebody take the minutes, Rhonda. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And so it's really having a curious and 30,000 foot view of what the hell's going on in both places, mm-hmm. Then how do you reallocate or radically delegate? So delegation is we delegate work to people best suited to the task. Radical delegation is delegating the work to just get it the hell done. Mm. Regardless of who's good at it. And that's where that we raise girls into women to notice everything. So of course they're better at it if they have functioning executive function skills. It's hardly equitable if she's the
okay.
one at it.
Oh, so, all right. So now I have a question about that. We don't have a lot of time. We're going to have to move into our wrap up segment here in a minute. But this radical delegation, I think, is amazing. And maybe that's the part two where we come back and have you talk about radical delegation and what that means, because the first thing that came into my mind was, yeah, but somebody else is going to do a half-assed job of it. So already I'm judging, right? Already I'm judging the quality of what they're going to do, which is why I feel the need to hold on to it, right? If I can learn to let some of that go and allow, like you said, good to be good enough, then other people can do it. Like if you ask, okay, this is perfect. So I say to my sons, do the dishes, right? There's still stuff on the side of the thing. Dishes got done, but it wasn't a great job. And now I'm like, right? This, but you know, allowing that process to evolve, grow, point out when things aren't good, not you take it back over because they don't do it well, but you
just look at the consequences.
Mentor. Yeah, absolutely.
The consequences of having a speck of dirt on the plate is far impact. It's less impactful than the consequence of you taking over the job of the dishes.
Right. Boom. That's a mic drop.
Boom.
Boom. That's a mic drop because it is hard for us to do that. Okay. I can't believe we're at the end of the show. We're already at the top of the hour. This was so, so good. So let's move into our wrap-up segment. The first thing, Roz, do you have a cup? All right. Awesome. So let's do our coffee shot. So Regina, hold up your cup and smile for the camera. Don't put it in front of your face. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
All right, there it is. I can't do this on the camera.
It's okay. We got it. And that'll be our coffee shot. So on the other side of this, this is called the What's in Your Cup segment. What we do is we wrap up and we say, what have we put in your cup in this conversation? What are your key takeaways? What are your thoughts? And so we'll come back and we'll wrap up and then we will be ready to wrap up the show right after this. All right, this has been an amazing conversation. So as we move to wrap up the show, Miss Roz Jones, what have we put in your cup today?
When she talked about the radical outsourcing?
Radical delegation?
Delegation, whatever it is, let somebody else do it. And I loved her quote. And I also love the part about we are all disruptors. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got.
Nice.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Roz. So Regina, as people look back over this conversation, what do you hope that they have taken away from this?
That you're willing to talk about this, that you have created. Rhonda, I am so impressed with your curiosity and how your curiosity, the way it connects to issues of leadership, issues of belonging, issues of, you know, the current narrative. I mean, you so beautifully wove this together. So I believe that anybody hearing this will take in a lot of hope that there are others thinking and talking and listening about how to disrupt this narrative, because it's killing them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And is there somewhere people can go to like learn more about the work you do or get your book or something like that?
Sure. Just Google me.
Awesome. What's the name of your book again?
Internet.
What's the name of your book again?
So I have one book called Emotional Labor, Why a Woman's Work is Never Done and What to Do About It. And it's you can get the paperback on Amazon. And then if you are somebody that's dealing with a lot of clutter, and that, I mean, maybe a precursor to the Emotional Labor book would be the other one. It's called Psychic Debris, Crowded Closets, The Relationship Between the Stuff in Your Head and What's Under Your Bed.
Mm.
And both of those disrupt the narrative of the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Thank you. Absolutely love that. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. This has been an incredible conversation. I can't wait to go back and replay it and extract some of the golden nuggets from it. So my last drop for today is the traditional notions of women's work are outdated and limit progress. It's time we redefine roles and responsibilities to embrace true equity and shared potential. So that is my last drop of today. And for everyone out there, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. For my guests and co-hosts, stay tuned for just a moment. And for everyone else out there, thank you for hanging with us, even as we ran a few minutes late. But we will see you back here next week, same time, same station, on another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. See you all next week. Bye.